My name is Cindy Vinyon. I'm the moderator for this session. I'm also the Lab Messaging Community of Practice co-lead along with Ricky Merrick. And this session is on the interoperability and harmonization, the effort we have done on harmonization within the Lab Messaging Community of Practice. And this is with three major projects, or at least it's major for us. And perhaps for you too. They are the ELR FLIP and the LRN LIMS integration. Let's see if I can work this.
There's a little clicker usually that.
There is no clicker.
There's no clicker in
Cindy,
the mouse.
I
no
use the
clicker.
Scroll wheel to move down.
Okay. Exactly. I was using the wrong button. Yes, I do IT for a living. Occasionally, I can't work a mouse, but I do IT for a living. And this is, we're kind of explaining what the Lab Messaging Community of Practice. This is one of the FIN communities of practice, and it's kind of the second wave of FIN. It started after I think all of us were involved in the vocabulary messaging community of practice, and finally decided that that was great for vocabulary messaging, but we really needed one to focus on laboratory messaging and laboratory vocabulary, everything from, you know, how do you encode a swab in an HL7 message to what's reflex testing and how do you support that in messaging, something that we're still kind of trying to work out, but we're getting closer. So this was a lot of the FIN stakeholders focusing on concern with the laboratory data exchange, making, you know, any time lab data needs to flow, you know, that was part of our world. We did look at defining, implementing, maintaining, evaluating, and evolving lab messaging to make it easier for everyone involved and hopefully to get part of the harmonization thing to get some gains out of each of the projects and see what each of the projects were doing so we could, you know, copy that rather than trying to start fresh. So we did start again with these three projects, Public Health Laboratory Interoperability Project. Everybody knows it as its short name of FLIP. The electronic laboratory reporting, and then the LIMS integration, and that was specifically for the LRN program. As I mentioned earlier, we were building on each other's work. We did find out through, you know, the fact that we've all gone to each other's work group sessions that we didn't want to start again. Because if we started over, we want to ask the lab to do something special for every project, and it made no sense because you're sending the same data. You got lab tests and lab results. So let's do it the same way every time, or as much as we can. So we really wanted to reuse as much as possible, which is where the harmonization came from. We wanted to reuse message types, message elements, vocabulary, if we could do that, and allow the labs to use implemented code, as well as allowing the receivers, be it public health or hospital or another lab, if you were sharing information, so everybody could use same reuse code, which is a nice buzzword for the IT people. And it really did reduce that burden on the implementers to produce or consume. And we really tried to work with each other. So when something happened in ELR and FLIP needed it, they would use that. And when FLIP found something that worked, we used it in LIMS integration. In fact, I stole a lot of what FLIP wrote for a lot of the LIMS integration because it was just such a great idea. And it made it easier on us as well as on our implementers. Here we go. We reach our goals through harmonization, better known as agreeing, being compatible, similar, or consistent. If you've been in this world long enough, you've known that that comes with a lot of conversation and a lot of almost arguments. But it's
almost.
Sometimes they are religious arguments. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But it did work. We do have differences, but we have harmonized as much as possible. We do that through vocabulary harmonization, using the same standard vocabulary in the same field to convey the same concept. So it wasn't just using the same vocabulary. It lands in the same place in the message. Which leads us to the structure element harmonization. Again, using the same element in the message to convey the same data. There is a some challenges if we pick different message types because of the different use cases, that sometimes it's not available, but we do the best we can so that hopefully the implementation is, limited on your choices. And then we did have, we tried to get message harmonization as well as HL7 version harmonization. If we want to convey patient-centric information, the HL7 version 2.1, ORU R01, which is the ELR, meaningful use message type. Unfortunately, not all of our projects are patient-centric. We have some that need to carry environmental samples, so they tend to be more sample-centric. I don't think we're not dealing with order-centric yet, but perhaps someday. But right now, we're just patient-centric and sample-centric. So we do have, unfortunately, different message types, which is part of why we wanted to go up to the structure, element, and vocabulary harmonization. So if you're using a PID segment, it's created the same way in every message, even though it might appear in a different location. Okay, why did we want to do this? This is kind of the lay of our land. We have LRN labs, which are generally state public health labs. We got the CDC that wants information from both a program perspective as well as like a surveillance perspective. We have the state EPI, of course, we have hospitals. And this is where it gets complicated because we have the ONC meaningful use of reportable lab result. That's just going from hospital to state. Then we've got the ELR, which there's state public health labs to the state EPI. We got test results that need to come into the CDC. We have some influenza test results that, again, are coming from state labs into CDC. We are working on test orders and results being exchanged between labs and CDC for reference testing or confirmatory testing. There's another orders and results between a couple of labs. Like I said, there's case notification. This is where it gets confusing. I'm going to quickly go through all this. Oops. There we go. And this is just a slice of the coming problem and the data exchange. I'm sure we could get probably a completely black picture. And so this was where all the three projects that we've worked with operate. Some of them are ELR. We have the LRN LIMS integration, which was doing LRN test results, as well as some of the confirmatory and the test orders and results. FLIP was also doing test orders and results between state labs and CDC. FLIP did orders and results between labs. So it's big and getting bigger. I'm going to quickly go through this one. Here's our timeline. There we go. That we started in 2006. I think FLIP may have started before that. No? Okay.
2006.
Shows you how faulty my memory is. that actually, 2006, the LRN program engaged us with getting data from their lab into the CDC. And then 2007, FLIP came in with influenza test results, about the time of the H1N1. And then we start 2008, we got another influenza test order results where the labs were working together to test for flu. And then we have the 2009, we've got the salmonella test order and results pilot. And in 2010, ONC joined the party and said, hey, you've got this great guide for the labs to report results. Let's use it for the hospitals to report results. So that's where ONC came into play. And these are all about labs sending data. Sometimes about labs receiving data, but again, to take some of the burden off, we've decided to let's at least figure out what the three of us were doing from a project perspective, and let's harmonize that as much as we can. As I mentioned earlier, we've got different programs, different projects, different messaging types. We had different use cases, and they ended up, fortunately, we all agreed that Lincoln SNOMED should be our test results and test orders. I got a little clap over here. yes, you're right. Let's start somewhere. But we did have a mix of patient-centric and sample-centric, so it was almost impossible to settle on that one Uber message that handled everything. So that's, again, why we have the three levels of harmonization. And back to our nice big picture. And I know you put a lot of, there's a lot of animation in this one. Let's see how one comes up. So you can see here we've added in the message types. A lot of them are our friend, the ORU R01, which is an unsolicited lab report. But then we also have the OML 033 for orders. These are in an OUL R22, both of which are sample-centric messages, and patients aren't required. It's about getting that sample tested so it can handle environmental as well as patient. And why do we do this? We got sick people everywhere. You can see here we're bringing in all kind of environmental things, oil drums. Peanut butter from the salmonella happened in this state, I believe. They traced it back to one of the plants here. So, you know, public health world isn't just about patients. It's a little bit of everything. And that's, you know, I'm tired talking about what we've done in the last 5 years. It's amazing. Just think about. So what else do we do? Because harmonizing it between ourselves is really helpful, but it's also about getting involved in other efforts. I think probably most of you we've all been on the phone with at one time or another, but we've been involved in the standard development organizations, HL7 primarily. I know I've run into both of these guys on orders and observations, which is focused on the laboratory data exchange, and then public health and emergency response work group in HL7, or the one it's FER, which is just the public health perspective. I think we get involved with, or send others to get involved with, SNOMED, LOINC. I think most of you know Sundek Ganeshan, who's our kind of vocabulary person and goes to the LOINC meetings and talks to SNOMED. We've also been involved in HHS, CDC, and FIN initiatives. I think all of us started from the original FIN communities of practice.
There you go.
She's even branded. There you go. Like I said, vocabulary messaging community practice is one we do participate in a lot. The CSTE, CDC, ELR task force. I think we're all in that task force, aren't we?
Yeah.
And that's been an interesting effort. Started out just being focused on ELR, and now it's really that ELR for meaningful use. A couple of other efforts with ONC, the standard interoperability framework, mostly the lab results initiative, and that has spawned the public health reporting initiative. So we've gotten involved in that as well as a group. And then some of the federal health information modeling and standards, or FIMS lab domain, and that was really about, it really is federal health architecture. And it was, you know, looking at the lab data and what does the lab have and what does it need. And so because of the whole lab messaging community practice, this made sense for us to get involved with. And yes, we have day jobs. Surprisingly, these are all kind of volunteer. So I'm going to turn it over to Rita Altimore, and she is going to talk about the ELR and has been involved with ELR national work probably for quite a while.
Yeah.
So please welcome Rita.
Thanks. Hi. Thank you, Cindy. So in case there's anybody out there who doesn't know me, I'm Rita Altimore from the Washington State Department of Health. ELR is part of my day job, so I'm lucky in that regard. You're right. It goes the wrong way. Okay. There we go. So most of you know this stuff already. I'm going to blaze through it. One of the reasons that I'm starting out is because ELR is the takes-all-comers of the trio that we work with, pretty much any lab that wants to work with I'm sending electronic laboratory results to public health. So commercial labs, freestanding reference laboratories, hospital laboratories, public health laboratories. So our public health laboratory, when it reports reportable conditions, reports them to the ELR system. Submitting electronic health records, as Cindy said, under meaningful use, and yeah, I should be looking at this, it's too hard to turn that way, receiving public health agencies. The use case, as Cindy mentioned, is submission of reportable laboratory results according to applicable jurisdictional law and regulation. So this is a states' rights issue. It's within the states and territories and tribes are the rules that specify who must report, what are the time frames, what are the characteristics of the results that have to be reported. So do you want only final results, or do you also want some preliminaries in some cases? Do you want all results, or do you want positives and, I mean, or only positives? Do you want results for a particular condition only in a particular population group, like H flu only under in children under five? And are there any associated results that you want with a sort of primary report, for example, antibiotic susceptibility for tuberculosis? And are there any requirements for specimen submission? So in our state, it's very clear that if any laboratory identifies any evidence of certain reportable conditions, they also have to submit a specimen to the public health lab. So as, again, Cindy mentioned, the standards that we use in ELR are manifold, actually. That's the dirty little secret. The meaningful use standard is pretty explicit. It's the what you see there, the HL7 version 251 implementation guide for electronic laboratory reporting to public health release 1, U.S. realm. In HL7, it's important to specify whether you're talking about an international standard or a standard that applies only to a particular domain. This standard was balloted only for the U.S. It was balloted in 2009 as before meaningful use was really even on the horizon, because laboratories, some of the particularly the larger national laboratories, came to us and said, can you please all figure out one standard? And in that current climate, then current climate, there were two laboratory reporting guides, one called E-Links, one that was, and another one that was anointed by HITSBI, which no longer exists, but both were 251. So when the ELR community looked around and we said, well, what will we settle on? We wanted to, as Cindy said, make it as easy as possible for laboratories to use systems that they were already going to develop to do other reporting from laboratories to, for example, clinical settings, and we would align ourselves as closely as possible with that to make it as easy as we could. So that's why we chose 251. In case anybody hasn't heard that story before, public health wasn't the leader on this. Public health was the follower. We were trying to make it easier for laboratories. Now, the history since then has been interesting. So, and we can talk about that if there's questions, but that's why 251. Pre-meaningful use, there was a whole spectrum of standards, and I didn't put a slide in that I have of the history of ELR standards, which date back to the late 90s, with a version 2.3 segment, a version 2.3 implementation guide from CDC with a custom segment, a Z segment, ending up with a spec that many of us call 2.3Z, which is still in common use out there. There are still, you know, I still have a number of laboratories reporting to Washington State that use the 2.3Z standard. And then there were implementation guides in 2.3.1, 2.4, 2.5, and then the one that was balloted through HL7. So before meaningful use came along, and now, even now, because meaningful use is still sort of ramping up from EHRs, 2.3.1 is the most common version in use out there. Vocabulary, what we really want is like for the test name and SNOMED for the coded result and HL7 and other value sets as specified in the rest of the message. And we get that sometimes, and we don't get that sometimes, and that's sometimes a problem. So the ELR working group started out as a CSTE and still is a CSTE activity. CSTE is the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists. It's the national body that represents epidemiology across the country at the state and territorial level. They set criteria for reportable conditions that then are, you know, taken by the jurisdictions and either adopted as they are or modified to be appropriate for the jurisdiction. The CSTE National ELR Working Group has monthly calls. J.A. Magnuson, who I don't think is in the audience, is the lead. Every Tuesday from 1 to 2 Eastern, you are more than welcome. If anybody's not on the mailing list and wants to be, just let me know after the session, and I'd be happy to add you. It's a really diverse group. We've got jurisdictional ELR personnel from every jurisdiction, CDC staff, laboratory folks, folks from LabCorp, Mayo, and Quest almost always are on the call, and LIS and integration engine vendors who are interested in hearing what we're talking about. It's open to all, and it focuses on topics of general interest to ELR. One of the activities that the working group carries on every year is the annual ELR survey. It's been conducted for more than a decade. It's one of the, you know, longest standing longitudinal surveys of activity in this realm. Survey states and territories and large municipalities. As you can see, J.A. Magnuson is responsible for getting a ridiculously good response rate. I mean, it's usually either like 95 or 100%, and it's really due to the fact that she just keeps bugging you till you send your survey in. I was expecting some other slide to come up there. All right, maybe it's later on. Yeah. All righty. I think we will come back to some statistics from the survey, unless somehow those slides got disappeared, because they were on my slide deck when I reviewed it this morning. Current activities, we participate in the CSD, CDC ELR Task Force that Cindy mentioned. These are the deliverables, the current deliverables. We keep always acquiring more, but in theory, this is going to sunset. The task force will sunset in October, so presumably the deliverables will end, but we'll see. We did an environmental review of the lab projects, so we knew what the lay of the land was that we were operating in. The reportable condition mapping tables restart, and you've heard about that elsewhere, and there's lots of other presentations at this meeting. The mapping of LINC codes to reportable conditions and SNOMED codes to reportable conditions. The first stage of that restart was released at the end of June. We're now trying to transition to a sustainable maintenance process, and I'm already pulling my hair out about that. Errata and clarifications document for the implementation guide. There is no human-produced artifact that does not contain errors. So the release one of the ELR guide contains errors. And we have, largely under Cindy's leadership, collected from the community of implementers as many of the identified errors and points that needed clarification as we could. Cindy compiled them into a document. It's been validated by the HL7 Public Health Working Group and is almost ready to go to HL7 for publication. We got to get annoyed. We won't go there. Requirements for reportable condition knowledge base. This is a commercial for Thursday if you're here. We're doing a full-day workshop trying to take the next step towards creating a knowledge resource that has the information needed for reporters around not only ELR but public health case reporting. And we're going to spend a day trying to take the next step in that regard. Cindy mentioned the Rhapsody routes for message conversion. There's a 231 to 251 and a 251 to 231 down converter. As you might suspect, it's a lot easier to go up than down. But even going up, there are tough questions, and it was a decision that we wanted to try to at least surface the issues and deal with them in a principled way and then publish that as documentation for the route. And then a challenges and best practices document that we're still working on. Here's the slide. Current status of ELR, you can see that this is the slide that represents whether there is legislation about ELR in jurisdictions. In most, now this isn't right. This is out of JA's. JA publishes the results of the survey, and I grabbed this slide, and this is interesting because this is not about legislation. Nope. This is current status, in fact. This is whether, I don't even know what this is. Okay, never mind. Here we go. Won't even go there. ELR current status. Here we go. This is the slide I was hoping for. So in 2010, from 56 respondents who said they were in some stage of ELR, most of them were operational at some level, but you can see that operational includes the 1 to 24%, so it could be you've just got one lab in operation. But one of the things that JA, this is one of JA's favorite slides right now, which is not only colorful, but shows that, and if I had a pointer, I could point. I guess I can wave with the mouse. Not really. The operational section is in blue, and we are getting more operational sites, fewer testing sites, fewer planning sites, and in 2010, there was nobody who said they were not involved in ELR in any of the jurisdictions that responded. So the trajectory since 2000 has been very clear that, you know, we've gone from very few states doing ELR to pretty much everybody. Question we get asked a lot is, you know, how ready are we for 251? The answer is not very, but getting there. So you can see that the 231 is the big green bar in the middle, which represents receiving and production. And down in the end is 251. You can see the green bar is much smaller, but you've got a bunch more people in testing and development, and then most people either didn't answer or said they weren't working with it. Now, this was the 2010 survey, so this was shortly after Meaningful Use selected the 251 guide. That highlights that. And this pretty much says the same thing in a different way, that 31 of the states are currently, or the jurisdictions are currently ready to accept 251, and 21 are currently testing. But if you can't read this fine print at the bottom, these numbers are from the ELC grant applications that were submitted in summer of this year. So even between the fall of last year when the survey was completed and now, it's been a substantial increase. And this was the ASTO survey that was also done this spring that shows that not as many are currently prepared as are planning to be prepared. Over on the right, for ELR 251, but lots of people are planning to be prepared. And interestingly, Leutcoat's version 2.27, which is also what was specified in the meaningful use rule, it's sort of interesting to think about folks not being prepared to accept a certain LOINC version, but some folks aren't. They're planning on it. So here's the future plans. Release 2 of the implementation guide. Cindy mentioned this S&I framework activities. One of the goals of the S&I Laboratory Results Initiative was to produce a single laboratory guide that harmonized those two other guides. Remember I said there were these two guides that existed out in the environment, and we built the ELR guide to be consistent with the HITSB guide, with one of those two. So now the S&I process is trying to harmonize those two guides. Some of the changes that come out of that harmonization may result in changes in ELR down the line if we adhere to our principle of trying to be as consistent as we can with what labs need to do for other business processes. We hope to continue to support our CMT. One of the interesting, for those of you who have been involved, you know this only too well, but one of the interesting processes about our CMT is it was really collaborative, community-driven, involving lots of subject matter experts on the EPI side and the lab side. Lots of feedback was produced that is going back to LOINC and to SNOMED, and we've gotten, you know, very clear thanks from both organizations for saying, you know, this is great. You brought us really rich information that's going to improve the underlying standard for everybody, not just for public health. Participate in the development of the reportable conditions knowledge base. Continue to participate in laboratory messaging standards development. And we hope to continue to support better tools for submitters and receivers. And again, in other sessions, you will hear about things like MQF, the messaging quality framework. Challenges for public health agencies, resources, obviously, maintaining the ability to take all comers, which is where I started out. Basically, if a lab comes to us and they want to send us ELR and they're not doing exactly perfect according to the standard, in most cases, we're going to try to work with them. Now, meaningful use is a little different ball game because we have to attest that they're doing things according to the rule in order for them to get their little check mark so they can get their money. But if it's not a meaningful use lab, if it's a commercial lab, I will try to do my best. And if they come to me with 231 and they can do that, I'll work with them. So I think most ELR systems will take that stance. At the same time, we would like to reduce variability, and we would dearly like to improve the vocabulary, LOINC and SNOMED in the messaging. Laboratories obviously are confronting the variation in standards, particularly to the extent that there are discrepancies between what they have to use to transmit messages to clinical settings versus ELR, variation in legal requirements by jurisdiction. I'm sure anybody at the jurisdictional level has already heard this complaint from labs. You know, why can't we all have the same standard? Why can't we all have the same list of reportable conditions? Why can't we have the same? So all I usually tell folks is we're working at it. difficulty providing all the information public health wants, and a classic example is the patient's home address. Sometimes the laboratories just don't have it, especially if it's a reference laboratory. Sometimes they can't store it in their system. Sometimes they just don't give it to us. But that's, I think, the minority of the time. Most of the time it's because they don't get it. But it's a real problem for us when we want to try to assign the results to the right public health jurisdiction for investigation. Continued harmonization with clinical laboratory standards. You've heard about these things, the Standards and Interoperability, LRI. What about the non-ambulatory labs to EHR, as I turn around and look at Cindy and Ricky? At some point, somebody's going to have to harmonize the rest of the laboratory messaging domain beyond ambulatory, which has been the current focus. And the question is, what's that going to look like and when? And then there's the whole question of clinical document architecture, or documents as lab reports instead of messages. Let me tell you, there's a constituency out there that would like to do lab reporting using documents. And it's a different HL7 standard, and it's something that health departments are generally not prepared for, but it's on the horizon. And it's continued harmonization within our own group. Some more challenges, and we were talking about some of these in some smaller groups yesterday. New sources of laboratory results like point-of-care testing. A particular thorn in our side is handheld blood lead testing devices where you can go into a school and test kids for blood lead. And basically all that does is print out a list of numbers on a piece of paper and to try to get that into something that can get to public health, because all blood lead testing results are reportable in our state, is a real challenge for us and for the clinicians. Internet labs, where you can send away your money and get back a test kit and get tested in the privacy of your own home. Who reports those test results? And to whom do they report them? Obviously, a number of those test kits are provided for conditions for which patients prefer privacy, like STD and HIV testing. Those are things that public health really needs to know about. And home test kits, same ballpark. And new types of laboratory results like genetic testing tend to be very complicated, and you know, we're starting to grapple. The reportable conditions mapping tables includes mappings for the most commonly performed newborn genetic screening tests, but we left all the other genetic screening tests for everything else that public health might want to know about till sort of a later stage, because we knew that this is a new realm for us. So we're going to do the stuff we knew the best first. So that's it. Thank you. Questions? No questions. Okay.
Okay. Our second project and speaker will be Ricky Merrick. And as I mentioned, she is my lab messaging community of practice co-lead. And you just kind of do all things flip in lab messaging.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Flip is hers.
Flip.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm Ricky Merrick. I'm a contractor to APHL, and fortunately, Flip is my day job, so I'm good on that one. whoops, go the other way. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, and Cindy had already talked a little bit about what the use cases Flip covers, so I'm going to probably fly through these particular slides pretty quickly. So, one thing we do is going one way. From the public health labs to CDC influenza division for all influenza test results. So not just the positives, we're sending positive and negative results, which is a little bit different than what is sent in ELR. So that's why there's a difference. And it's part of the WHO Global Influenza Surveillance Network. The other thing we're working on is bidirectional test orders from the public health lab to CDC, or from public health lab to another public health lab, for example, for reference testing or for surge capacity help. What wasn't on Cindy's slides is that both those use cases use the RouteNot Read Hubs, and those kind of act like the post office. So if you're Dari and you have to send to five different state labs, you want to send just to the post office and let the post office take care of, you know, how that gets delivered to the other five. So that's what the RouteNot Read Hubs are for, and that's why I kind of try to put the little postman in there. The standards we use for transport, we use FinMS, which is the RouteNot Read Hubs are part of that.
For messaging, we're using the HL7231 ORU-R01 message, which is similar to what's currently highest used in ELR. And when we started in 2006, we originally wanted to start with 251, and everybody said, we're not ready, we're not ready. So now we seem to be behind the ballpark, but as you'll see later, we are planning to move up to the exact ELR guide so that we don't have yet another guide for FLIP. For eTor, however, because we're looking at situations that are not only patient-centric, we did choose the specimen-centric because that can handle both patient and non-patient samples. And we chose 2.6 here because of some of the quirks in 2.5 that we found out. For vocabulary, we're using LOING for ordered and resulted tests. We're using SNOMED for results. And we're using SNOMED and HL7 for specimen terms. So SNOMED right now, we're focusing with the 2.6.1 message. For the 2.3.1 message, we're using the HL7 table terms. We're using UCM for units, similar to ELR and HL7 vocabulary elsewhere in the message as specified by the guides. So why do we want to do FLIP? You're probably all familiar with current reporting. If you're not reporting electronically, you have to either fax it or fill out a paper, and then people have to do data entry on a web-based form. So we want to get away from that and get the lab folks back to what they do best. So here's a quick data flow. Public health lab tests the influenza, has a result, creates the message, sends it through the RNR hub to CDC. We're done. Current activity and status for ELSM, we've got obviously the requirements and the vocabulary released. We did that collaboratively between public health labs and CDC. We had working calls trying to make it right for everybody. And then we started implementing, and we had a couple of labs start out and get there on their own, but it took a long time, and so we really wanted to improve, especially with H1N1 pandemic showing up in 2009. There was an urgency to, you know, really hook up every lab. So we got funding to create what's called the PAT, or a FLIP assistant team. The PAT has three people, a project manager, so that's the person that keeps bugging the lab to get it done. The technical architect that sits down and helps you write your actual mapping and helps you create the message, and the terminologist, that's the person that tells you what codes go where and helps you map your local codes. And so as of August 1st, we now have 29 labs sending production data to CDC automated. They don't have to do anything. It just goes out the system whenever it occurs, or in some cases at the end of the day. So this is what FLIP looks like. It looked like in August 2009. So what's green? Dark green is production. So you see there were only four dark green ones, and there were a couple in testing. December 2009, we've got one more in production. August 2010, we've got a couple more in production. PAT's been active for 4 months at this point in time. And December, we're getting greener, and this is status now. So we're pretty green. We're pretty happy. We want to get rid of the white spot. So for eTor, this public health lab here has a salmonella sample that they can't fully type. And so they create an HL7 message and send the message through the RNR hub to CDC and mail the specimen. CDC gets the specimen, performs testing, has the results, and sends the results back through the RNR hub. So current activity there, as Cindy mentioned, we started that in 2009, but it's been on again, off again, on again, off again. And so now we're currently on, and we got three public health labs and the CDC working on result messages. We got a couple of sample order messages already in from the public health labs, and so we're hoping to get the testing and the connection all done by the end of this year. So this is what FLIP looks like as a big picture. Future plans. Well, harmonize with LIMSI even more where we can. Expand to other diseases for ordering from the state to CDC lab, and for other diseases state to state as needed. And for ELSM, most importantly, update the message structure to ELR 251. So we're just going to take the ELR 251 guide and vocabulary and overlay it on the FLIP requirements. And hopefully that'll not be too different. And then expand to other diseases like rabies or foodborne that you currently have to report directly to CDC. So that's it for FLIP. Any questions for FLIP?
I have one.
Yeah.
I got asked on the escalator yesterday, so how come it takes so long to agree on which link and SNOMED codes to use for things?
Okay. So there's different ways you can set up your LIMS system. And so if you, for example, you can set up your LIMS system and let's take the CDC influenza test kit as an example. There, you're looking for several different influenza parts or subtypes. And so you can set that up in your LIMS as a single test with one result. So all I report out to you is either I detected no influenza or you report out which subtype you detect. So that's one specific LIMS code and then the respective SNOMED codes that go with that. Or you could set up your LIMS system where you actually break it down into components of the test and you report each component separately. And then because of the way this panel is, you could actually set up two components together and report that as a single result. So there's like three different ways you could set up that particular test in your LIMS system. So now take that from one test to, you know, all the tests in your LIMS system and suddenly you have a problem. So what we're trying to do is trying to find the recommended way to set it up, and if you can set it up, please set it up this way. And if you can't, then here's the other ways, and it will work with Olynx and SNOMED accordingly. So that's why it takes so long. Any other questions? Do we have any online? Okay. Then, Cindy.
One more. Thanks, Ruby.
Okay, and our last project-based presentation, I think, is in your program listed as Jason Scott, but we've traded out John Lipsky for that. I believe he was called the Venerable John Lipsky yesterday. So he's going to tell... Some people were in that session, huh? So he's going to talk about the LRN LIMS Integration Project.
Thanks, Cindy. So for those of you that were in the presentation yesterday given by the esteemed Jason Scott... you have my permission to just go ahead and take a nap because I'm going to pretty much repeat a lot of what he said. So just go ahead. I'm sure your neighbor won't mind. Just lay your head down. Jack, if you want to move up, feel free. No, sorry. So let's see. All right, I am going to fly by this because I think I do recognize a lot of faces that were in there yesterday. So I'm going to fly. If there's questions, just throw something at me. So really, LIMS integration, who and what? It's the LRN laboratories, the Laboratory Response Network, which is over 150. Are we over 160 now? 160? Over 170? What do I hear? So over 160 laboratories, right, that do the LRN algorithms and assays and then are responsible to report that to the LRN program at the CDC. So CDC developed the LRN Results Messenger. I should know my facts. What is this, 4 years ago, 5 years ago? Somebody help me. Five, I'm getting a five. Jasmine, thank you. So 5 years ago, really as a bridge solution for laboratories to be able to securely transmit their results for the LRN to the CDC LRN program rather than faxes and emails and phone calls. And so it's a good bridge solution, but that's what it is. So we had labs come to us and say, well, we bought this shiny new LIMS that we have now, and we're putting our LRN tests in the LIMS, but we want to get the data to the CDC. And that's what LIMS integration is about, is to enable that functionality through standardized data exchange. I won't even say the word HL7. You guys have seen it enough. I won't talk about our version. Maybe I do. I might be lying. But so it really is all about enabling that exchange of data so folks can use their LIMS in their lab without any further double data entry, Kind of what Ricky was talking about with Flip. Get it in the system and it gets sent to the consumer. And that's where we're going with LIMS integration. And I think I said each one of these bullets. One point is that, you know, LIMS integration, we kind of started about 4 or 5 years ago as well, and we were following what was then the FIN standards, which was the 2.5 OUL message. Jason touched on it a little bit yesterday. I'm not going to go deep into this, but that is a different message than what ONC said needs to be for reportable lab results. The primary reason for that is because the LRN handles more than just clinical reporting. It handles white powder, environmental, food, water. And so, you know, I'd love to have a cup of coffee with folks that have ideas on how we can kind of work towards harmonization of that. But I'm not going to go any deeper into that right now. Well, I'm doing the same thing you did, Reed. I'm looking up there. What am I doing?
It just seems to make sense.
It does. So our current activities, we've developed collaboratively our data exchange requirements, and they've been developed and released. Actually, we've had multiple releases of those based on feedback from the LRN laboratories. We have a very active LIMS-I work group, again, where we work together collaboratively. As of March 2011, there are 3 labs that have been validated to send data to CDC via LIMS integration or standardized HL7 messaging. So again, this is a repeat of some of Jason's slides from yesterday, but where we were, the big number on the bottom there is 0 in August 2010. We now have 2 that are live and in production, have gone through several PTs, routine reporting, and working well. And we have more labs engaged. As of currently, we're adding some labs as well, more labs that are engaged. And really kind of the big targets here are by the end of December, we're hoping to have 14 labs live in production messaging with the LIMS integration message. So future plans, again, 14 labs by the end of 2011. Where we, and Cindy alluded to this a little bit, right now we're talking about a one-way flow from LRN lab to CDC. What we want to look at next is bidirectional, so we can support test order and result, either sending a test order to a CDC lab to get a result back, or perhaps to LRN laboratories that need for surge capacity to do ordering and resulting and sharing samples. And then the LRNC side of this, really I should have said that, most of the HL7 messaging right now is for the bioterrorism agents. We have a solution for the LRNC that involves more of a spreadsheet upload, but really based on feedback from the work group, as we move towards messaging for the LRNC chemical agents, the feedback was we want to use an HL7 message. And that actually, we talked about that probably a good 12 months ago now. And I would propose that we probably do need to revisit that message type and that decision in light of now what's come with some of the meaningful use stuff. Because again, we want to be careful that we introduce a new message only when we're really driven to by use case or business process. I would love to, and you know, I know, Dari, I'm going to pick on you too, because I know you talk about, we'd like to have this one Uber message that does everything. Not sure we can get there. We don't want 100 messages, but I don't think we can have one. So got to figure out what the right level is. But I'm done. Wow. Okay, I did go fast.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, wait. Questions? Yes. Right.
You know, all into one. And then, you know, if I have to go through, you know, there's enough, I have to have rapid stuff. There happens to be enough experience.
So we probably broke the rules. We probably needed to give you a microphone because folks didn't hear the question. But let me do my best at restating it, and correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, right now it's kind of every man, for man, woman, and child for themselves, right, to figure this out across all these multiple projects. How do we kind of have a common, bring the common voice to the vendors to say, do it once and kind of reuse it? Is that basically where you're going? Okay. So let me speak to it from a couple levels. One, Jason talked about yesterday some of our efforts with, from the Limbs Eye perspective, some of the major vendors. I guess I can name names. Star Limbs, Chemware, you know, the Open Ellis group we're starting to work with. Because what we want to be able to do is at least partly get to where you're going, is to say, here's the requirements, vendor. Get it right. Here's your real-time PCR for anthrax. Here's the code. Get it in the system. You don't have to really go ask the LRN labs. We can tell you how to do it. We've had some success with that. It's still a work in progress. Now, on the Rhapsody side, that's a great idea. We need to kind of look more at that. We started to go down the path a little bit with some of the CDC tools to build in some of that innate mapping in the Rhapsody tool that's been put on hold for a little bit. But it's certainly something that is worthy to be considered again. As far as I think the other challenge I heard, bringing the projects together more to have a common voice with the vendors, I think is a great piece of feedback for this group to hear. I had one more smart thing to say, but I used up all my smartness, so I'm sorry. I forgot. I have, anyway, but let's talk. Those are great ideas. John.
What's the ideal forum for advancing
what? Oh, don't get electrocuted.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, what's the ideal forum for advancing this harmonization that obviously is needed?
Yeah, great question. And this is it. I mean, really, I mean, Cindy, if you want to talk about that.
Okay. It's funny you should ask, because I think it's actually in these slides. Because this is where we've been, where we are, as a community of practice and actually as the individual projects. And it'll wrap up. We do build upon each other, trying to get something that's, you know, hopefully that, like I said, the vendor knows what they're doing from the beginning and they do it once and you're not paying three times for one-off solutions or four times. Not even going to cover too much on this one because you actually said this last bit. I think John wrote these slides, even though I'm delivering. So there we go. How to get involved, because right now, this is three projects, and we do know there's certainly more than just these three projects, although it probably covers a good 80 to 90% of what's going on. So we are looking to grow the community of practice, make it a little bit wider, a little bit bigger. Ricky spent some time with even some EPIs and things trying to encode specimens and what does a swab look like in an HL7 message that's came from some body part and collected by some method and with something on the swab, all of which could be important in lab testing. So we've gotten, that was fairly pretty big group, and not just lab people. So basically, if you want to get involved, we do have a PH Connect group. So if you're on PH Connect, it's phconnect.org, and you can go there and get on the community of practice group. We also recently established a listserv, and this is how to get on the listserv. I think there are, four members, which might be the four of us on it right now. Oh, five. We got five, six. So it's growing. And so that's going to be our main communication. Up until the listserv that literally was established last week, it was, we would schedule a meeting, and Ricky would tell the FLIP people, and Rita would tell the ELR people, and I would tell Jason, who would tell the LIMS integration people, and that was our communication. So this will be much, much easier. So this is really how you get involved in the forum. PH Connect is not quite a wiki, but it is a forum. So if you have questions, if you have comments, if you have best practices, you can post them all there.
And if you need to take a paper home with these instructions, the APHL booth has a paper for you to just pick up. It has the PH Connect link on it, and it has a listserv instructions on it. So come by and pick up the paper.
That's just probably much easier than downloading our 10 megabyte. We made one big thing, and we almost broke
We were just following the rules. That's what we do. we're standards people. The template before you started to put anything in it was like 4 megabytes, so yeah. Never mind. I'll just say from an ELR perspective that the same issue about vendors applies, and that if anybody was at the ELR task force report out yesterday, I know some people in the audience were even presenters at that, you heard there was a large laboratories and LIS vendors work group within the ELR task force trying to, again, come to some of those taking some of those steps forward, because for a long time the ELR community has recognized that doing one-offs with every single lab is not the most efficient or cost-effective way to get what we want. It really pays to work with the vendors and to get the vendors to understand what we want as system vendors, so that then they can implement it in all of their customers' laboratories. So as you heard, it's a work in progress. Some vendors have been much more cooperative than others. And even under the meaningful use umbrella, if you talk to Tom Safranek, who's the current president of CSE, he'd be happy to tell you which of the laboratory system vendors he has been, you know, handshaking with, so that if you've got, what's his list? It's Cerner, Sunquest, Sun, there's a couple that he has on his list where, you know, they've made a concerted effort to do public health reporting. And so his suggestion is, if you're going to start working with anybody, start working with labs where those vendors have their systems in place. Now, there's a little asterisk next to that, as anybody who's had this experience will tell you, that just because the vendor offers it does not mean it's in place in any given laboratory, because often it's a large price tag that comes with the service. So Cerner, for example, does a credible job of public health reporting. We get their laboratory results, and they have a centralized model. They suck up the results from all their clients, and then they machine them according to the public health rules, and then they send them back out again. They offer that as a service to their clients for money. So it's not something, it's a commitment that a laboratory makes to subscribe to that as a service. So it's not, you know, there is no simple solution, but I think we're completely in agreement. To the extent that, you know, you can write once and read many, we'd like to do that.
Rita, can I add to that?
I'm Jennifer McGee, I work on the CDC employee working on the LIMS integration team. John, I thought you might want to speak a little bit to how some labs we've worked with are actually abstracting a lot of their message building away from their LIMS. One state in particular has they create like an Uber extract that just takes everything under the sun out of it, and then they put that into Orion Rhapsody and build, and they, doing that, they can generate any number of messages, and when we say, hey, you got to do this, they don't even sneeze. So John, I didn't know if you wanted to speak a little bit more to that, since I think you know more detail on it.
Well, sure. I mean, you really summarized it well, Jennifer. I mean, I think there's no one size fits all, right? We talk a little bit about the vendors doing this, and maybe vendor X having a solution for LIMS I, that's okay. But then if LIMS I changes and has new requirements, you're going back to the vendor. So, you know, again, there's no one size fits all, but what we have seen is those labs that are able to respond most effectively are, you know, as Jennifer described it, abstracting at least some of that that transformation out of the limbs. Because then a LOINC code gets changed, your users are, they don't even know about it. You don't touch the limbs, it's mapped outside the limbs. Same thing with multiple messages. Some of our most nimble labs, I mean, one of them, and Rob's not here, I always brag about Rob Byers, but, you know, Rob takes his data out of his limbs, and he basically just then magically transforms an ELR and sends it off, transforms a limb's eye, transform a flip. And it's because he's taken that, he's got the core in the limbs, right, to do the business, but taken out most of the data mapping for the LOINC and SNOMED and the HL7, and he does that out in a tool that's specifically designed to do that. So probably didn't add to anything Jennifer said except compute things. Go ahead.
I don't think so. But so I was going to say, so what I think what Shelley was asking for is, you know, us to get together to create the list of data elements that they should put in that Uber XML.
Yes.
So that then they can, yes, they can do whatever they need to do in whatever integration engine they use.
And John, I saw your hand, but if I could, but we need you too. We need the labs, right? Because honestly, there have been times where we have to almost advocate on the behalf of the labs and say, you guys really don't want to ask your vendor to customize this. And so, you know, having your voice to say, hey, there's a standard way to do this, go talk to the LIMS Eye team, go talk to the FLIP team, the ELR team, that really helps, because sometimes what we've seen is kind of things get out of the horse gets out of the barn, and then we're trying to bring it back in. If we can be involved in the process early, we can help to kind of facilitate that. So that makes sense? Okay. John, I saw your hand.
This is probably too simplistic because I'm very ignorant in the laboratory domain, but it sounds to me like there's the possibility of designing and developing reusable services, mm-hmm, that can extract and then transform the data for mm-hmm, meeting certain, all these various message requirements that can exist outside of the limbs themselves. And that could be widely reused, used to, by any lab. Is there any opportunity or forum, or are there folks addressing that capability? And if not, your intimate knowledge of these problems is really the key, because once you design the business requirements, the functional requirements, then it's a rather simple matter to develop those shared services.
Oh, you'd like to think so. I was going to say a couple of things. One is Washington is next to Idaho, so their good ideas always rub off on us. No, but completely independent of Idaho, one of our brilliant developers came up with the same solution, and I said the same thing from the vocabulary and messaging end of it, which is, we can't do that. We've got Starlim's version 9. Mm-mm, not going to do it in Starlim's. We're going to do it outside of Starlim's. So that's the course we're pursuing. I think it's really useful for folks who are doing ELR in a jurisdiction to also be involved with their PHL so that they see both sides of the fence. I mean, it's a real eye-opener to recognize the challenges that the laboratories face as well as the challenges that we on the receiving end of ELR face. So I think that's, you know, one of the first things I tell anybody who's new at ELR is go talk to the folks in your public health lab and really get to understand how the business works, because that's, you know, essential to understanding the whole process. About the single schema, that was exactly what I started thinking about when y'all were first raising that issue. First thing that I thought about is, once we say, oh, we're going to create a single schema into which we can dump all laboratory data, then the next question is going to be, okay, so why don't you put it in a CDA? But we could do that. I mean, that's actually the good news, is if we could develop that Uber schema, then we could, as well as producing all these different kinds of version 2 messages, we could also put it in a clinical document. I think I was with you all the way down to the shared extract service. And again, my perspective is limited in somewhat by the fact that I've been working with RPHL and Starlim's. It seems like that is about the hardest thing. I mean, once the data's out of the limbs, if you do it in a principled way and you do have a, and we've, you know, we've given our lab a schema and we say, okay, we want you to yank, we don't care how you get it out of Starlim's, get it out of Starlim's into this pattern, and then we can make a 2-3 message, we can make a 2-5 message, we can, we don't, you know, that's the easy part. But it's getting it out of Starlim's. And even the step before, it's what Ricky alluded to in response to my question, which is, how do you structure the business to put the information into the limbs in a way that it can come out so that we can then put it into the information structures that we have for messaging and documents? So that's that, from, I mean, right up to now, in my experience in my state, that's been the hardest thing.
Jack, just a second. I wanted to add to this. I was going to say the same thing. Extraction is going to be not reusable because everybody sets up their limbs in a different way. What we can probably agree on is the list of data elements and, you know, whichever format we want to put that in, and then from there, you know, do whichever transformation we need to do. One other thing I wanted to say to that is you got to make sure, though, that you can do your mapping to the standard codes from your local codes where the person that does the mapping has access to it. So if you have a good relationship with whoever runs that mapping engine, that's the best place to put your standard codes because they may change, your local code may have to change, you're going to add new tests or new results, and that's the easiest way to change or place to change it. However, if you are not able to talk to your IT guy that's controlling that mapper, you do need to put them in your limbs, and then you haven't, you know, that added problem of how do you do that. So it kind of depends a little bit on your own architecture, and that will vary from state to state very much. I think as part of the FLIP assistant teams, we've gone out to so many different state public health labs, and I can tell you not a single one is set up the same way. Even within the same vendor. Yeah. Because, you know, the business processes at each lab are looked at differently and analyzed differently. So even if you all have Starlim's version 9, you're all going to be set up differently.
Well, and I think it's more than that, too. It also depends upon the size of the lab and your volume and what else you have going on. Because I know one of the requirements that's an optional requirement in LIMS integration is send us the the shipment that the specimens arrived in. You know, because sometimes a lot of it's chain of custody because we are dealing with LRN, but that thankfully is an optional requirement. But we've seen some labs that have a separate shipment department and a separate shipment system. Like, that's fine. Go get it from there. It doesn't all have to be in the LIMS if that doesn't work for your model. So, yeah, everything is different.
Yeah, and I want to have the blame shared across all parties here. It's not just that the business processes vary in the labs. It's that, to be frank, I think a number of vendors have seen a business model in, you know, customizing, in my perspective, excessively. And it means that not everybody who uses Starlim's 9 can even talk to each other because the Starlim's has been so cooperative in making everything be absolutely tailored to your individual needs. And if that starts without, you know, an eye to standards in the end, at the end of the game, then, you know, I don't even like to look under the hood. It's just scary.
So I think we're going to take Jack's question.
Well, I was just going to add something. I was thinking about, you know, Jennifer's thing, and I was at a conference last week on environmental data, and they call it sort of the bucket concept, where because a lot of the limbs are being designed in such a way that you can't really just go machine to machine. You know, you collect your data and send it out. It's sometimes very hard to get the data out. They're literally, you know, running all the data every day, you know, through a procedure which creates a massive database with all the data elements that might be used, you know, by the different clients. And of course it grows, it gets huge. But that's the way they basically, I think that's the approach that Jennifer is saying. They call it the bucket technique, where all the data elements are pulled out on a regular basis, so now it's easy to extract. But of course, the other side is we're finding many of the LIMS vendors really like all these new standards as they develop because it's more business, and they'll fix it in one state, but then they'll go and charge another state the same thing, you know, to apply it there. So it's really there's not really an incentive here, from their perspective to standardize. So that's just a couple comments.
So really, I don't know if you want to talk. if you want to talk about the informatics committee's involvement in trying to get this at least some of the functional requirements in Starlim's harmonized and kind of create this basic model versus a customized model, right? Because I was going to give you the floor since you're the chair of that.
Thanks, Ricky.
Multitasking.
As I catch up on a few emails on my BlackBerry, sorry about that.
That's okay.
But no, actually, it's a good topic to bring up. You know, we do have 25 plus states that are currently using StarLIMS as a public health lab vendor, and part of what we have been doing through our informatics committee is working with that vendor using the APHL LIMS requirements document to try to have a more standardized product, something that keeps us from each having to customize what we need to do our business every day. I think what we learned through the requirements document that was published back in 2003 is that, you know, we share a lot of the same common business processes. Even though we may have, you know, some variation in how we accomplish them, we're doing a lot of the same thing. And so as this vendor's moved from a version 9 product into a version 10, we have tried to engage them to make sure that, whereas I think we all went about trying to, in the V9 implementations, there were a lot of customization. There was a lot of one-off projects. And I think what we were trying to do with the vendor in V10 is say, you know, let's go back, let's stop and look at this, let's make sure we do things in a more standardized manner so that we can all benefit from, you know, one, the things that we all learned and customized in V9, and let's get them in V10, and then let's make sure that we can all use V10 without having to each individual state approach the vendor for changes that they need. And I think, you know, when you come to things like FLIP and LIMS-I and things that we're all wanting to get engaged in, it's just a perfect example of what we're trying to do is to come with a community voice and say, this is something we all need, and if we're going to be able to continue to use your product, you know, we all need to have our requirements satisfied in a similar way. So I have to say that it's been something that's been very helpful. I don't have any statistics right now. Actually, we met about that just yesterday. We were going to try to come up with a report, but there has been, 1005, 1006, and 1007, where we have actually influenced changes that have gone into those releases based on this effort. And, you know, some of those are things that will touch the LIMS-I project, the ELR projects, as well as the FLIP project. So I think that it's been a successful venture, and what we're actually trying to do is just to have all of the states come together and say, you know, I've looked at V10, this isn't in it, I need it in it. Then we look at it as a community and say, yeah, we all need that, and then the vendor's been willing to put it in at basically not any one individual state's expense. So I hope that addressed the question. It really is. it's a huge project, and we, you know, have tried to engage as many states as have the time and opportunity to be engaged, and we actually have taken small subgroups of our PHL community to Hollywood on 3 different occasions where we've looked at demos, critiqued work that's being done, you know, had an opportunity to basically vote on the functionality, and we continue to do that through the informatics committee.
And why don't you say who you are? Just
oh, sorry. I'm Willie Andrews, and I'm a lab operations director at the Division of Consolidated Labs in Virginia, and I currently am the chair of the informatics committee and have been the chair of the StarLIM subcommittee for more years than I can count.
And we appreciate it.
Since we're obviously having just a free flow of communication, I have sort of a question I'll pose to the panel. It wasn't that many years ago that CDC had embarked on a, I guess we'll call it a socialized LIMS situation, and we've gone the privatization route at this point, and we're looking at multiple systems, and our ability to be interoperable requires that these different vendors, who each have their own solutions, be able to work together. So where I'm going is we talk a little bit sometimes about SaaS and the cloud concept. It takes years to build LIMS systems, and once you've basically spent 3 years putting it in place, no one's really very excited about doing that again. But I think on a regular basis we do have to open up the question, have we gone the right direction at this point? And sometimes we hate to ask that because, we're already committed. But I think it's a worthy discussion, particularly as we're trying in a collaborative way with public health to be able to bring all of our data together. Is there any chance that laboratories could compromise and work towards one solution? Or is there ever discussion on that at this point? That's very open discussion, but I was wondering if there's a place for that.
Nobody's grabbing the mic.
No. On the surface, if Costco is selling EHRs to providers, you can get your EHR as a provider. You can contract with through Costco to get an EHR. Software as a service. You don't have to house anything in your. There's obviously some hardware you have to have in your office, but not much. So if they can do it, maybe there's hope for laboratories. It's political. I was with a bunch of people at dinner last night, and the question was, in terms of reportable conditions, why can't every provider just dump a CDA document into a central repository, and then public health will just thumb through it and find the stuff that's reportable? Okay, so some of you had the same reaction that some of us around the table did, and from the vendor's perspective, that makes perfect sense, because then they don't have to think about the rules and the what LOINC codes, what SNOMED codes, what ICD codes. And we kept saying, we're not sure that this is going to, we were sure, individually we were sure in our own jurisdictions it wouldn't fly, but from a national perspective, and the vendor kept saying, so the problem is not technical. The problem's not technical. The problem is, it's political and it's religious in some aspects of approaches to things. But those are the hardest problems. I do HL7 and LOINC and SNOMED for a living, partly because I'm not a lawyer and I never want to be. But it doesn't get me out of religious wars, but it gets me out of a certain kind of debate that I think is. It underpins where you're going. Now, I think the problem's smaller for getting laboratories together because you're all doing the same kind of business, and maybe there's some concern about doing it in the cloud. There's privacy, security, all those kinds of things. So maybe that could happen. I don't think it's going to happen on the reportable conditions front, at least not while I'm still in my professional life.
So first, don't we have a limit, one question per attendee? No, I'm teasing. So I think it's political and a bit practical as well. And so I bragged on Idaho. I got another state, my superstar Virginia guys. I have no idea about volumes, but I would bet you Virginia's handling a lot more volume than Idaho is, right? They got a bigger shop of scientists and technical people and what have you. Could a one-size-fits-all work in both those? I don't know, right? So I think it is a practical issue as well that I'm not sure you can have this solution that's going to work for everybody. Now, on the other hand, does that mean we should just all be customized? I don't think so. The idea that I like is really the one Jason brought up yesterday, is that idea of, we don't need to build the Bill Gates house with all the bells and whistles, but there are some basic things that we can agree upon, right? And we can build that spec house. So fundamentally, we all do the plumbing the same way. We all do the electronics the same way, the airflow, right? Exactly. There's code for that, right? But, you guys like flowery drapes with whatever, and you guys like striped drapes. That's fine, right? So I think there's a balance. And I would also just also say that I think some of the activities that you've heard about, people are attempting to do some of that in their own space. So Willie's, you know, description of the work group there, I think, is driving towards that. Let's not reinvent it, you know, 26 times, but let's try to do this in a common way. I'd also point to the Iowa guys and working with Missouri and Minnesota on OpenELIS and some of the ideas there on how do we share and, you know, develop this reusable component. So, you know, will it ever, should we ever go back? I don't know. Again, I'm not going to comment on that, but I do believe that, you know, we're moving more towards where we should be in that pendulum from one size fits all to way too customized to kind of where do we hit in the middle. I think we're getting there, in my humble opinion. But I'd like to hear if others disagree. I mean, I know you do, Jack.
You're still making up your mind on that one.
But it's a good question. Very good question.
Yeah, because I was coming out of data modeling for me. You know, I know when I do data models, I talk who my users are, and kind of get all their requirements, and not just the data entry users, although those are usually the first ones. You also need to, why are you collecting this data? What are you going to do with it? So I think it's, you know, almost funny to me to hear something. Well, if we just kind of get all these documents and drop them in one place, and public health could come and just pick out the ones that are reportable. Well, the point of reporting a condition isn't to report a condition. It's to analyze that, to find out if there's problems, to make policy and recommendations. So you have to analyze it. Can you do that with paper? Well, yeah, it takes a lot of time. Exactly. I was trying not to go with the let's just slam CDA because I don't know enough about it to say that. But you know, it's almost the yes, we have to analyze, and kind of the same thing with labs. Labs do more than just test and report. They got to manage, you know, their shipment. They got to manage their equipment. They've got to manage all that things they use. So all the supplies, and so there's more than just that report or just that end result. So I think how do you balance that without and do it with one framework without getting into everybody's business and missing a lot of it? I mean, I don't think I want to get into inventory management of the stuff that's in the lab. That's just, I'd rather not. It seems too hard. Let's just get the lab results out for public health. Personally, that's my focus now. Okay, are there any other? Oops, we've got a question in the back. Where'd the mic go?
I think we're running out of time, but and this might be a long-winded question, but more and more public health labs are doing non-human testing for multiple purposes, including LIMS integration, including ELR, animal, food, environmental testing. Is there plans? Is there anything in the works for implementation guides that are going to be uniform across the different projects for that type of messaging?
Well, I mean, I guess in a way the message type, both LIMS-I and FLIP for eTOR, the one we chose, will accommodate that because it's an OUL, so it's a specimen-centric, so you can send your patient specimens that way because you can send the PID information in it, but the PID is optional, so you don't have to make up a Mr. Soil or Mr. Lake Water. You know, you can just drop the PID segment and get whatever information about the environmental sample you need in other places in the message. So from a message structure, I think we have that. Now, obviously, you'd have to, in your Uber XML, make sure that you include all that those data elements that are important for environmental or animal samples out, you know, if that's your approach. If you want to just pull one time for anything, you'll have to make sure you build your Uber XML to include those data elements that you may only have for some specific specimen type. And so that was actually one of the things we were struggling with in the lab and messaging COP was how do you tell people what origin your specimen is? Is it human? Is it animal? Is it environmental, and then maybe within environmental, is it food or water or devices? So you have an answer to those, you know, those ideas, come and join us and help us out.
Right. I think we've got the basic framework on that. We certainly pick the right message type because we don't even require the patient information. So it can be any specimen, and that was the point. And then there's still some details we haven't quite worked out. And I think it gets larger than that, too, because we've seen some, you know, where the screens to enter data, there's human and there's environmental, so what do you do with animal? Well, they kind of fit into human, sort of, but so there's still some work to do on that back-end process as well. So it's an interesting challenge.
I think the bigger problem is that there aren't specific fields for capturing all of the information in the same way that there is for the PID. And so if everything has to come through OBRs and OBXs, that becomes more than a structural agreement that has to happen.
And that's the revealing HL7's underpinnings. I mean, HL7 started out in hospitals for people, and it's only because public health's been at the table over the last decade that we have message types that handle specimens, and public health and veterinarians, of course. Two very important veterinarians in particular. But we're still shoehorning those capabilities into a model that was designed for people. So I agree with you. It requires us to do some work, and I keep having the image in multiple circumstances of, you know, the wicked sister trying to fit her foot into Cinderella's shoe. But it's not easy, and it is a continual struggle, which is why we also will recruit you to be at the standards development organizations. It's a constant struggle to keep the needs of public health at the table at the SDOs, because the clinical community so much drives the process, and they just forget that we have other and additional needs. Our needs are bigger than theirs.
Yeah, I've seen some that forget that sometimes you need to physically ship a sample to the lab, as opposed to walk it down the hall to the lab. So, it is definitely a challenge. I think I had that question on the HL7 list, is what do you do with, I can't remember if it was animal or environmental, but trying to find a better solution. And I think we got from one of the veterinarians, we use this, and it was a whole new segment.
But it's a message. There is actually, in 2.6, another reason to go to 2.6, besides some of the vocabulary that was associated that fit us better in 2.6, and the fact that actually the NK1 segment in the message that we're using, for some reason or another, was not in the 2.5. We don't know why. But but anyhow, so 2.6 is really was the right version. But there is a population-based message in 2.6 that was particularly put in for the veterinary folks so that they can do their animal herd testing and report on it. So
there is still work to do. That is definitely true. Yeah, I know. And we've got right on time. So thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for a good discussion.
Yeah.